Well, June is the most popular wedding month of the year. Over 10% of weddings occur this month. The average cost of one of those weddings, say hello to $32,600, folks. This morning, a conversation about how to navigate this big event without going broke, as well as the tricks to navigating finances once you become a married couple. With us again, this morning are our smart money experts. They are Lucas Butchell. He's a principal with KHC Wealth Management. Lucas, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Alex Petrovic is founder of Petrovic Financial Services, and Alex has a wedding coming up in his life pretty soon. Not personally, but in the family, right?
That's true. This is September.
Congratulations, Alex.
Thank you.
Barbara McMahon is president of Innovest Financial Partners in Brookside. Barbara, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, let's begin with some current events before we walk into the world of weddings here, some current financial events here. Lucas, the Federal Reserve has elected to keep interest rates unchanged at their June meetings. How significant of an event is that?
I think it was expected when we ultimately got to the event. A lot of people had that date circled on the calendar earlier in the year as a likely time that the Fed would raise rates again. So mm-hmm. they raised in December of 2015, and it signaled that they intended to continue to do that in 2016. We got a pretty bad jobs report in early June that kind of changed the Fed's thinking, I think. And another item that we'll talk about in just a second, which is the Brexit referendum vote in the UK coming up this week, I think had the Fed being cautionary, at least from their June meetings.
Do you expect anything, Barbara, the Fed to do anything else when it comes to interest rates this year, or what's your own personal radar showing you right now?
Well, the Federal Reserve says it might. It has reserved the option, if you will, to do mm-hmm. it two more times. But what the market is expecting is probably one more time. Mm-hmm. But going into the June meeting, there was an expectation that they might raise it in July. I rather think that's off the table now. And it really depends on how the data comes in. These two other things that Lucas mentioned are weighing very heavily on the deliberations that the Fed is making. So I think it's too early to call.
You know, one of those things, as Lucas mentioned, Alex, is Brexit, this referendum over in Britain, citizens there voting to decide whether they will remain part of the European Union or not. Polls showing the whole thing to be pretty darn close, a lot closer than people thought it was going to be.
Right. Yeah, I guess in the last couple of days, it's swung back to them staying. Mm. And we're seeing a big rally in the global markets today. Because
as
of
a result,
that,
yeah.
Because it's more predictable mm-hmm. what that means as opposed to what could happen if they left. And there's that unpredictability that, you know, could affect the banking system in Britain and then, you know, spread around. So most people kind of, I think a lot of people want them to stay in to provide the stability that that does in Europe. You know, the history of Europe is, you know, certainly laden with wars, and them being connected at the hip financially really keeps them, I think, better, you know, focused on being friends as opposed to enemies.
If they leave, if Great Britain chooses to leave, Lucas, what'll happen? What does that mean?
Well, I think that there's a lot of uncertainty with what that would mean, but I think clearly you'd see a risk assets, so things like stocks, sell off. I think you'd also see currencies kind of get all out of whack, especially in the UK. I think you'd see the pound sterling decline significantly compared to values of other currencies. And really, I think what it would do, a couple of big things. Number one, I think an immediate impact would be all the trade agreements that kind of bind the EU would have to be renegotiated with Britain and renegotiated pretty quickly to keep commerce moving. The second, I think the bigger concern is this the first domino to fall with the EU, and does this embolden then, you know, the people in Spain, for example, that want to exit the EU, mm-hmm. And does this kind of start the evolution and ultimately the destruction of the European Union as we know it today?
Yeah. Barbara, Lucas already mentioned the May jobs report being something of a disappointment. Job growth, only 38,000 net new jobs being added. Lots of concern in the marketplace about the strength of the economy. Again, what's your read on what this jobs report portends when it comes to the strength of the economy going forward?
The jobs report was interesting because although only 38,000 jobs were added and the expectations were higher, we still have an unemployment rate of 4.7%, which is what many economists consider full employment. A couple other things happened, too. One of them is there's speculation that the reason the jobs numbers were so low was that people were retiring. And another thing that was revealed during this report was that salaries were higher. And so, again, it's just the uncertainty. I think the Federal Reserve looked at it and went, well, how do we call this? There's a little bit of good. There's a little bit of bad. How do we weigh in on it? And I think it's the uncertainty that made them just say, let's just wait until we've got this all figured out.
But still, 38,000 jobs, Alex, that wasn't much. Yeah. It's pretty puny.
It's pretty low. Yeah. Especially in this low-rate environment that we're in historically, since the lowest since the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, we got 10-year bond below 2% for 7 years, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's hard out there. You know, they're not getting much help from Congress. There's no roads and bridges. Unanimously, everybody knows roads, bridges, airports are some of the worst in our history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Eisenhower came out of World War II and basically said, we're going to raise taxes and we're going to build roads and bridges. It was unbelievably wonderful, and it was bipartisan supported. And we don't have that right now. And I think something like that would be huge to help. And why wouldn't you want to finance road and bridges at the long bond? Let me see. The long bond today is 2.5%.
Cheap money.
So, unbelievably cheap money.
Yeah.
But they're too busy, you know, throwing pies at each other up there on the East Coast.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think you're hearing Alex Petrovic is announcing his campaign for the presidency here today and up to date, and he's got his platform all laid out, and you can vote for Alex. Okay. Well, good luck with your run, Mr. Petrovic.
Thank you.
I hope that goes
Thank
well. Well, let's turn to our main topic here this morning, which is planning for a wedding. June, it turns out, is the most popular wedding month. Over 10% of weddings occur here each month in June. What's the second most popular month, Lucas?
December, surprisingly.
Who would have thought it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have.
That was surprising to me when I was looking into it, getting ready for the show. I didn't find much of an explanation for it, but December's a popular month as well.
Barbara, does June make sense to you? Were you a June bride?
No, I was a March bride. I don't think anybody but me. I don't know of anybody else who got married in March.
Who gets married in March?
I did, because we decided to get married while I was finishing my master's degree, and there was spring break. And
I'm trying
to be very, very practical there. I don't know why June. I guess because we're past severe weather season. The weather's usually beautiful. Spring is usually beautiful.
It's hot.
Well, this year it certainly is. I can't explain it either, Lucas. I do not know. Why December? Why June? Got me.
Well, let's talk about the average cost of a wedding the presidential candidate Petrovic is looking at in the eye here. Average cost in the country, $32,600. Average cost in Kansas City, a little more manageable, $24,300. That's from thenot.com. That's a whole lot of money, Alex.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you think about it, what that would buy you otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Down payment on a very nice house.
Huge down payment on a house.
Very nice car. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the expectations, weddings, it's kind of like a Madison Avenue event. I mean, it's literally promoted from every fashion, corner, from the jewelry stores to the wedding gowns to the venues. So, it's just the pressure on these young kids generally is really huge. And I think one of the things that's changing, though, is the ages that young men and women are getting married is putting a little better perspective on costs.
Meaning they're waiting a little while.
They're waiting a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think they're making better choices on costs, and it's giving some relief to, I think, parents too.
Yeah.
As they're waiting longer to get married. So, but it's a big event, And I did see one thing that's positive, though, when I was doing a little research, is that it was commonly thought of that 50% of all marriages ended in divorce, and that was, the 70s and the 80s. And that seems to be reversing.
That's not so true anymore. I read the same thing.
I think one of the reasons that they're saying that the tide is turning is that children are waiting a little longer to get married, especially if they have education, if they have college educations in particular, which I guess maybe they're making better decisions.
So $32,600 doesn't necessarily buy you eternal love, but maybe your chances of getting eternal love are greater now than they've been before.
That's what statistics are.
Run through some of the most expensive items in any one person's wedding. These numbers, again, are just going to knock you out, folks. The venue, $14,700 based on national averages. The engagement ring, $5,870. The band, the entertainment, $3,800. The photographer, $2,600. Flowers and decor, $2,300. And you're only getting started at that point. Those numbers are buckling my knees, Lucas.
Yeah,
but you have two sons, so maybe you're a little bit off the hook.
Well, maybe a little bit, but I think sometimes they're changing there with this new millennial generation. Things are getting split a little more evenly than they used to. But
what's up with that? I have two sons too, so I was counting on a break there, but you're saying I'm not going to get the break.
Yeah, it really looks like that may be the case. So some of the social norms with, you know, the bride's family generally taking the lion's share of the cost with the wedding, while I think they're still that's the most likely scenario now. I think those times are changing. I think people are realizing that's probably a bit unfair, and you know, the traditional norm of, you know, I'm marrying off my daughter into a new family, that really doesn't kind of work like that in society anymore. And so
doesn't sound unfair to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the arrangement. Yeah. Well, Barbara, what do you think of it?
Yeah. What I have found in among some of my clients is if they have sons, they are contributing to the wedding. But I found that the control hasn't shifted. And the parents of the groom typically say, I have saved this much money and you may have it for your wedding, but they're not the decision makers. So sorry, Lucas, I mean, you've got some time to build into this, but I don't think you get a whole lot of, you still kind of smile and look pretty and stay out of the way.
So the family of the bride, you're saying, is still in charge.
Still in charge, very much.
Yeah. I wonder why that's the case.
Tradition.
And
I think so many little girls.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one here that can claim this. You grow up with this notion of it's my big day. It's my opportunity to be the fairy princess for a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you have all these visions of you walking down the aisle in this magnificent white dress, which, by the way, runs about $1,500 these days. Yeah, so it's kind of how we were hardwired, at least back in the day, you know, when I was looking at marriages.
Yeah. Well, given these numbers, these sort of staggering numbers, there are ways to begin to think about how to approach handling numbers like this. Alex, do you want to begin to sort of lay out a couple ideas here that couples might want to begin to consider?
Well, first off, they should watch Father of the Bride with Steve Martin portraying George Banks, 1, 2, or 3.
That's a good movie. Yeah.
First one was excellent.
Were there sequels, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure there were. Were there not? Yeah.
Who knows?
Nobody
knows.
So, well, you know, I think that, again, in our profession, is about planning. So the longer you have to plan, I think you can make better decisions, you can negotiate better prices,
mm-hmm.
you can look for sales and that. So I think the number one is for the young bride and groom and the families to plan early.
Right, right.
Number one.
And that would mean how many months before the big day?
Oh,
a year?
Gosh. Well, a year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you can think of looking for bargains for gifts for the wedding parties that now is very traditional and
mm-hmm.
can be from, you know, very small to fairly large, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Booking, whether it's a destination or the bachelorette parties or whatever, but looking at it early enough, you know, and having a strategy and determine what it is you're going to pay for. And then that also involves, you know, the groom's parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going through one right now, a September 10th wedding, and it's important to have that other family involved because mm-hmm. they want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be involved in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Just bet on it, and you want it to be positive.
Well, if our listeners have some thoughts and they want to chime in on some things they've considered as they approach the big day, maybe ways to save money, maybe ways they plan financially for an event like this, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Option B is to tweet us at KCUR up to date. Lucas, what else should couples, other methods to save money might be sort of in the offing here that you might suggest?
Yeah, I think starting to kind of get a plan in place, like Alex said. So the first thing I always recommend is getting an automatic savings going. You know, when your paycheck comes in, just grab a, you know, a chunk of that and stick it in a savings account. One of the things I really like is setting up a name on that savings account. Most banks give you the ability to label accounts these days.
Mm-hmm.
Call it your wedding fund. I think that emotionally kind of vests you in that account and makes you less likely to raid that to, you know, take a trip or, you know, spend that money somewhere else. Because it's earmarked for your wedding, earmarked for your big day.
Yeah. Barbara, anything else you might throw out there?
I think the notion of found money, and I'm thinking about tax refunds, bonuses, just money that you perhaps didn't expect and isn't part of the regular budget, that's easy to kind of slide into the wedding fund and set it aside for the big day.
Okay. How about as you approach some of these big expenses, I mentioned the engagement ring costing an average of about $5,900 these days. Alex, what are some thoughts there?
Well, I would, you know, shop. There's a lot of different jewelers around in terms of
and the price is very wildly.
Yeah, it's a huge markup in that business. Just it's one of the largest markups. And we have been convinced, you know, over the years that diamonds are a woman's best friend. And I think most women would agree to that.
Yeah.
So there goes, you know, the wallet right off the bat. But, you know, there's different qualities of diamonds. There's different places to buy them and even online with guarantees. So I would think, again, it's a budget. You know, laying out a budget for each of these items.
There's an old notion that you should spend, what, 2 months' salary, 3 months' salary on an engagement ring. Is that the case?
I'm not sure about that. I don't have insight into that. You know, I think young kids, though, depending on what their income, you know, level is and how they've been raised, they kind of have an idea of what is important for the bride. To, you know, to, in terms of what they're going to spend, whether it's $2,000, $5,000. I mean, I've seen $20,000 and $30,000 rings.
Yeah.
It just blows me away. But so there's all levels.
Lucas?
I think it's interesting that, you know, that 2 to 3 months of salary came from an old advertising campaign by De Beers, the diamond company, in the early 80s. And so, you know,
I'm
I would
shocked. Shocked. There's dancing and going on there, yeah.
I wouldn't let the diamond company tell you how much you should spend on an engagement ring. But I think, again, I would have a conversation between the significant others and really understand expectations. And, you know, some people say, well, you can't do a surprise like that. But I think most couples realistically have conversations about as the relationship gets serious and understanding where your significant other kind of falls in terms of expectations for a ring. And then using that as a starting point. And also, how much can you afford? I mean, that's really where the conversation should start.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. David from up in St. Joe. David, good morning.
Good morning. I think the cost factor discourages a lot of people from getting married. And I view marriage as a spiritual experience with a blessing so that our churches, Community of Christ, many of them don't cost anything for the wedding. You have to get a license, of course, and then a donation for the hall if you want to have the reception in the church hall. So people can get married very inexpensively. I could even foresee them doing it at a regular Sunday morning worship service because the amount of words that have to be spoken are really quite minimal. But we could also make it their day and still not charge them an arm and a leg.
So you're suggesting that maybe the original purpose of the wedding is getting lost in all the financial rigmarole here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the princess idea is neat. My daughter did that. But it's the spiritual side that keeps people together more than it is the other. And people need ministry. Not only before the marriage, but afterwards.
Right.
To keep them together. So that's we would be glad to talk to anybody with regard to getting married inexpensively because we think marriage is a good thing.
Well, David, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
This is my anniversary, in fact.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, David. This email we got just a minute ago, our wedding will be this upcoming December. Our budget is $1,200 total, and this is not a bare-bones wedding. All the bells and whistles. The difference? We are making everything. An artsy friend made the invitations. A cooking friend is catering. A friend is a cello instructor and is playing music. The venue is $450 at Wyandotte County Lake Park. I am making the flowers out of crepe paper. I am making my own dress. My brother owns a clothing company and can order a silk wholesale using his company. A stylist friend is doing my hair. A friend is making the cake. All our friends that are helping are giving us the thing that they are helping with as their gift. A friend is starting her own photography company, and the pictures are free if she can use them in her advertising. Either we are making it with our own hands or friends are. We're just paying for materials. There you go.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well done.
Sounds like they're very blessed with good friends.
There you go. Good
yes.
thoughts there.
Wonderful.
Ann from Atchison on the Kansas side. Ann, good morning.
Hello. Yeah, I was my input was the reason why I think the December weddings are the second highest month is because of taxes. Because when you go and you're, you know, all of a sudden a married couple instead of filing single. And that, I know that's what we did. So we were married in December. Yeah.
So it's a tax break that dictates when people are getting married, Ann. That's kind of a sobering thought to me.
I know, right?
Is that true? Are financial planners here? Does that make sense based on your own experience?
It's going to depend on the income of the couple, but yeah, I mean the married filing joint tax brackets expand, so you're going to have lower rates. You know, there is what's called a marriage penalty because it's not quite doubling of the single rates, but depending on the makeup, yeah, it definitely can make a difference.
Well, and I still think December might be popular simply because it's December and the church, going back to David's point about it being a religious ceremony, the church is usually beautiful in December, and you can just kind of ride into that, the good feelings that the season generates.
Yeah. Well, this hour we're talking about financial planning for weddings and how to navigate this very tricky minefield. We're visiting with our smart money experts, Lucas Butchell, Alex Petrovic, and Barbara McMahon. You know, one piece of advice that we didn't get to is sort of this need, Barbara, to have an open, honest conversation with your significant other about expectations heading into all this, which strikes me as an awfully good idea.
I would go way beyond saying it's an awfully good idea to saying it's absolutely necessary. And it sets the tone, I think, mm-hmm. for the marriage that will follow. You should walk into a wedding knowing, for example, the other person's debt limit, their comfort with certain investments, other investments, where they stand financially.
Mm-hmm.
Because from here on out, after the marriage, they will be making those decisions jointly. And so they need to understand where the other person is coming from. What kind of background do they have? What formed their decisions? Because what researchers have found is that many decisions that people make financially are actually molded by the family experience.
You know, lots of other thoughts. This is a great first budgeting exercise as a couple. Start with priorities. Define what is and isn't important. Define how much you can afford to spend. Alex, sounds basic, but it's pretty important.
Yeah, it's real basic stuff, and especially when statistics have shown that money issues are one of the biggest issues for getting along after you're married mm-hmm. and contribute to, you know, longevity or divorce. So to follow up on Barbara's, and I think we'd all just continually, we could spend a day on this, is, you know, openness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your history with money? Do you have debt? How do we, you know, is there going to be my money, your money, or all our money? But just the openness of talking about it and agreeing upon how we're going to handle money is huge. I mean, that's the way we, you know, that we operate in this country. So we've got to talk about how, if we're on the same page.
There are these thoughts that if you're paying for the event with, you know, little or no family help, there are alternatives out there, such as a destination wedding, you know, a low cost or free venue, or asking for help funding the honeymoon as a wedding gift alternative. What's a destination wedding, Lucas?
That's where you fly somewhere to a destination, generally warm in a beach or somewhere more exotic than Kansas, and get married. And oftentimes the guest list is much smaller. The people that come to see you get married or participate generally pay their own way.
That's the expectation. Still.
Yeah, that's the general expectation, Steele. And oftentimes they're much smaller. And so you're not providing a meal and a big experience for hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. And Alex, that's sort of where you're headed here in the next few months.
Well, we're having a destination wedding. This is true. And one of the things, I mean, ours is a little larger, and I don't think it's going to be an event that's going to be cheaper than having it here. But there's some pitfalls there, too, because there's a lot of things you can do yourself if the wedding's in town, you know, the mother and the father, the groom and the bride.
As we talked about here with our emailer. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets a lot harder when it's out of the city, so to speak. But one of the things that we've decided to do, and many people, I think, would consider on a destination wedding, is make it a vacation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually going to drive down and get a little tour of the South and then enjoy our stay down there. So to make it kind of an event, since we're already, you know, we didn't pick it. It wasn't our choice.
Yeah. Let's talk about some planning ideas for parents. And one suggestion here is that you want to establish an amount you can afford and are willing to spend and set those expectations very early on with the couple. And again, that gets back to our conversation, Barbara, about open communication here.
Well, it does. And what I've discovered, I don't know if this is a trend, but among my clients, and I'm talking about the parents of the groom, it seems to be very popular to say, we have this amount of money set aside. You may spend it in any way you wish. But that's very open. It's very honest. They know exactly what they have. They can budget it. They can spend it down. They can save it for the honeymoon. But they know what the contribution is, and they can work within those frameworks.
Kids are said to be frequently making better financial choices when they're spending their own money versus yours. That's not a huge shock, Lucas.
It's not a shock.
I have a little experience with that in my life, yeah.
But I can tell you I've had several clients that, you know, if there's no expectation set up front and it's, you know, they're just writing checks or, you know, they're making decisions along the way, and they're like, wow, the cost just added up so much. And that's where if you start up front and say, look, we've got, I mean, even if you're going to stay at the Kansas City average, right, we've got $25,000 to spend for this event. It's amazing when you know the boundaries of what those costs are and that you're having to make some trade-offs because you can't get everything you want in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
The kids do come around and make some better decisions. But if there's a blank check, there's never a limit set. Don't be surprised if you go way beyond your expectations.
What do you say to a couple, Alex, who comes to you and sort of mentions they might be borrowing money to stage a wedding, put a wedding on? What about that? Good idea or not?
Well, I think it's a bad idea. People do it. And I think if you're going to borrow money, it ought to be for something that, you know, is more than, you know, a four-hour event.
Mm-hmm.
So we would discourage it. If they have to borrow it, it means they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can't see anything good about that. But, you know, if they're clients, you don't want to totally bust their bubble on their big event of their life, at least the first big event. So, but I think it's, you know, something's not right if they got to borrow money for it.
I've heard that banks actually offer wedding loans or special event loans. Is that right, Barbara?
I can't say I have any experience with this. I have also heard that, but I've not seen one in action.
Are the rates lower than they normally would be, or do we know?
No. I think you're going to see higher interest rates, probably less than a credit card, but more than, you know, traditional things you're buying like a house or a car, because they're typically going to be unsecured, meaning, you know, they're going on your good credit. So you'd expect a higher interest rate.
Okay. How about some ways to cut costs? You're getting ready for the wedding. Costs are still really high. Someone chime in here. What are some ways to cut costs once you're staring this monster right in the eye here?
Yeah. Well, doing your own printing for invitations or, you know, the day event, the menu is certainly one that a lot of talented young people can do, is doing their own printing. Some people can do their own flowers or be a part of, you know, setting up the venue or taking it down. Negotiating, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's a good negotiator. And you really can. If you're willing to walk away, you can get better prices if they're not there someplace else. So don't take the first offer.
Lucas?
I think starting with the biggest expense, which is the venue. So looking for alternatives that are much less cost. That one of the callers mentioned, the church reception hall might be a good option at a low cost. Another one is the food. I think that's one that often spirals out of control for folks because they want to add choices. They want to have a vegetarian option. And each time you add on an additional choice, you're jacking up the price of the food. So keep it simple. One or two options is a way to keep that cost down.
And another way is traditionally weddings are held on Saturdays, but there's no reason to hold a wedding besides tradition on a Saturday. You can get a better rate if you do want to use a venue of some type if the wedding is either on a Friday or a Sunday. I'm seeing more and more Sunday weddings just because of the cost break.
We're talking about ways to finance weddings, keep the cost down with our Smart Money team here. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Perhaps you have some good ideas for couples who might benefit from your experience when it comes to saving money and managing all of this wedding business when the time comes here. Okay, let's just sort of fast forward here. Now you're married. Now what? With all the new information that couples should consider as they start their financial lives together, I'm wondering what types of things might be tops on their list, Lucas, as you look at this new life experience these couples are heading into here.
Yeah, usually the big thing that couples have to deal with first is how do you manage just the day-to-day, month-to-month cash flow? So they've used to been dealing with it in their own silo. Now suddenly there's two incomes generally and two people participating in both the income and the expense side of the equation. So kind of setting up a structure that works for both in the couple to manage that effectively.
Yeah. Alex, what else would you throw out
there? Well, you're back to the budget again, you know, and the planning. So those are, that's where you start, and that's where, to delineate every different item that, you're talking about. Secondly, I think you need to establish, soon, how do you spend extra money?
Mm-hmm.
Do each of you get a little free money of your own? Is it out of one checking account? And a lot of times kids of, these days are living together already. So they might have some of this worked out, but they need to have an open conversation because this is, this is the real life.
What percentage of married couples in America do you think actually sit down and work out budgets and then stick to them month after month? I mean, look, I can't believe we're looking at sky-high numbers here.
If I had to handicap it, I'd guess maybe 20%. Maybe.
I'm guessing that's high.
I'm guessing it's high, too.
I bet it is, too.
Or sticking to it.
Well, and another thing beyond the budget is you need to share your debt load because I think we've all heard of instances where the marriage is over and suddenly one party finds out that the other has $20,000 in student loans that he or she had no idea their partner was bringing to the marriage. So it's not just the creating the future, it's looking at the past and figuring out how that weaves into what you're doing together.
Do our smart money experts actually live by a budget? Did you guys, Lucas, you're nodding your head,
yeah, I do.
I know he, but I would bet he does, and I don't.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah,
just getting to know him here.
It's a no here.
I will say though that
not even close.
Guilty
right?
as charged.
Yeah,
but a budget is a living thing, and there's I go over budget on certain things. We go under budget on certain things, and you have to adjust it all the time. So sticking to a budget, I think, is a bit of a misnomer.
It sounds like hell to me, living that way. Barbara, do you do that?
We do, but to Lucas's point, it has to be a living, breathing sort of document. And so
With flexibility built in, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So we sit down every week and go over how much did we spend, how does that look, did we go over here, we better go under here. So, yeah, it's not a hard and fast, $10 over, we're in serious trouble here.
If you go over it every week, it sounds hard and fast to me.
Yeah. I'd like to talk to a living, breathing couple who actually lives by a budget. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Lisa from Leawood. Lisa, you're on up to date.
Hi, I've enjoyed this conversation.
Good,
and
thanks.
I just have a couple of cost-saving tips, I think. One, I heard you guys talking about diamonds, and my son is actually going to purchase a synthetic diamond, and I said, well, what about your fiance, if you know, whomever that may be? He doesn't have one yet.
Oh.
And he says that he wouldn't want a fiance that, you know, was into the mining of diamonds, you know, and with all the human rights, you know, violations that go on in Africa with mining the diamonds. And synthetic diamonds are just as beautiful, in fact, sometimes even more so than what you can get a real, you know, purchase a real diamond with. And another thing,
I've never heard of this option before, Elise. I'm glad you've mentioned it. I guess I had never had occurred to me there was an option to the traditional diamond here.
Oh, yeah, there, you know, and a lot of people pick sapphires and, mm-hmm. you know, and so a traditional, I mean, a diamond, you know, can be substituted in many, many ways. But another option, and this is something I've been telling my kids since they were five, when they do get married, if they elope, they get $20,000. If they have a wedding or a reception, they'll get $10,000. If they have both, we'll just use the $20,000 to go towards the wedding and the reception. But I do that because I think $20,000 would go a long way in putting a down payment on a house.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and even $10,000 would. And I kind of come from the wedding as being something very spiritual and something very personal. And
which is a little bit getting lost in our conversation here today, admittedly. Yes.
But, you know, that's a way to kind of also compensate for paying for a wedding, is to, you know, fund, you know, a down payment on a house instead.
Well, I'd like you to do me a favor, if you would. Go on your calendar and make a note somewhere and let me know how this synthetic diamond thing works out for your son. It may work out beautifully. I have my doubts. I'll just be curious to hear in 3 or 5 or 8 years how that worked out for him.
Okay, I will. Well, like I said, he won't marry somebody that isn't into that. So
right.
And
we'll see about that.
Diamonds available for him to use, but
right.
He's not interested in those. So.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Dan from Overland Park. Dan, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about financing weddings and managing costs and cutting costs and all that good stuff. Good morning.
Good morning. Before I get into my main comment, I want to mention that I bought my wife a wedding band and engagement ring combo, and she loves the fact that I did not spend that much on it.
That's,
it would have just gotten in the way.
Hang on to her, Dan.
Yeah, you got to keep her.
Yeah.
So we got married about 6 years ago, right after we both finished college. And we probably spent about $18,000 to $21,000 on the wedding, not including the honeymoon. And in retrospect, since we still owe about 10 of that to her parents, fortunately, in a no-interest loan.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly other ways that we would have wanted to spend that money, thinking about our lives now. You know, we both have student loans. We have a house now and a child, and it's just added debt. On the other side of things, that the wedding was definitely very memorable, one of the most important days of our lives. And some things I definitely wouldn't want to cut too much down on, like photography and videography, because that's how we'll remember it forever.
Right.
But, you know, maybe we didn't need to necessarily invite as many people. And maybe, you know, every wedding I've been to, I don't think I remember what I ate at any of them.
Right.
It's usually pretty good, but I probably wouldn't have spent quite as much on the food.
Right.
We did get married on a Sunday, and that definitely saved us some money. But
okay,
ultimately, you know, if you're starting a life with somebody else and you already have other debt, I would never advise anybody to actually get out a loan, especially one you have to pay interest with.
Right. So the loan thing, you still regret it, sounds like, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm lucky. It was with my father-in-law.
Right.
He's not a very hardcore bank. I haven't made a payment every month or anything like that, because he certainly appreciates the fact that I want to pay down the higher interest loans first.
Right.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Beth from Kansas City. Beth, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thank you. Just listening to all this and the amount of money that people spend in the tens of thousands is absurd and obnoxious to me. I've been married for 6 years, had a really wonderful, classy wedding, but bought my dress off the rack from Bloomingdale's, did my own flowers, had a friend of mine do pictures, which, as a gentleman before, I agreed that's a good place to spend the money because that's what you look at and remember.
Right, right.
But from open bars to spending lavishly on $100, $200 plate dinners, it's, no, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't talk about that now with the people that we're with 6 years later.
Right.
We talk
right.
about our jobs, our families.
Life moves on, you're saying. There, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd rather talk to them about a beautiful vacation I took than a day I got to wear a white dress and hoped everyone looked at me. That's just, this seems a little ill thought out.
Right. Good thoughts, oh, Beth. God. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I got to say, I went to a wedding, many people in town have, at the Rose Garden at Luce Park a year or two, three ago. And it was one of the best weddings I've ever been to. Just a beautiful day, great venue. I assume it wasn't all that expensive, obviously, being in a city park. But what a great place to do it. And it topped a lot of the more elaborate weddings I've been to before. So, yeah.
Steve, if I can throw out a quirky statistic,
please.
Something I ran into from an NPR story. Actually, in January of 2015, a couple economics professors at Emory University said the weddings that last, the marriages that last, stem from huge, cheap weddings. So inexpensive weddings.
Oh, that's interesting.
With high attendance. Those, and I've got a statistic.
Cheap weddings with lots of people there, you're
cheap
saying.
Cheap weddings with lots of people, spending more than $20,000 on a wedding, these economists say, adds to the probability of divorce by 3.5 times compared to couples that spent less.
Wow. What do you make of that?
I was very surprised by that. But
yeah.
But maybe it means that these people's priorities are in the right place.
Yes, that would be the thing, the logical conclusion there.
Yeah, I would just close with people that are, you know, close to getting married or families that are talking
He's
about.
Speaking personally
besides,
now, folks.
Besides myself.
His own family.
Know,
yeah.
Is just not to let peer pressure. You know, no, there's going to be pressure amongst your friends, your relatives, and whatnot, and just try to concentrate on the moment, the significance of this union. But it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think it's not hard.
Well, I think under a Petrovic administration, you might pass some sort of bill saying you can only spend so much money at a wedding.
Or we could take the Bernie route and just say all weddings are free.
Yeah. Just deal with it right there, right? We're going to leave our very good conversation there. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all our calls today. Lucas Butchel is with KHC Wealth Management. Alex Petrovic is founder of Petrovic Financial Services. Barbara McMahon is president of Innovest Financial Partners in Brookside. Thank you all for a very good conversation. I appreciate it very
Thank
much.
You, Steve.
Absolutely.